probably 90% of people who eat paella in Spain eat a bad one because they don't go to a good restaurant for
it. That's tragic. That's a tragic stat you just dropped on us. There was
totally, and I made that up, but I think it's probably appropriate. There's a lot of frozen paella out there.
Back to another episode of the Bored with Nelly podcast. Today I'm joined by James Blick along with his wife. They run a YouTube channel called Spain Revealed. He has created hundreds of videos about Spain and experiencing it as a local, from travel guides to tips on renting in Spain to tapa bar experiences to even going to the Bernabeu to look at Ronaldo's underwear. James has done it all. Welcome.
Great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, no, I'm excited.
You're a bit of an idol for me, and I'll explain why. I don't say this lightly. You've done things that I want to do. My understanding is correct. You've switched careers.
You've
moved to Spain, and you married a Spaniard.
Yep. Tick, tick.
Yeah, I've got almost a second, two of those down. I'm still working on a visa. So, I'm like, this is the guy. This is the guy to model my life after.
I mean, that's a lot of pressure, but I don't know. Happy to play that role if it works for you.
So, what were you doing before this whole Spain journey?
I did a few things. So, I trained as a lawyer in New Zealand, where I'm from, and I worked as a lawyer for a couple of years. It was kind of way back. And after working as a lawyer for a couple of years, I realized that my passion was in doing something more creative. So my family works in the film industry. And so my brother's a producer, my dad, who's retired now, a cinematographer and director. And so I decided to go into film. I wanted to make movies. I wanted to be a director, a screenwriter. I wasn't quite sure what it was. And so I did that for a while. And then, you know, what we have in New Zealand, we have a thing. Well, I don't think they have it anymore. It used to be called the Overseas Experience. Everyone before or after university would go and do what was called the OE. And so I moved to France while I was still kind of working in advertising in New Zealand and making TV commercials. And fell in love with a Spaniard in France. Moved to France to meet French women, but met a Spaniard. And then once I moved to Spain with her, I just gave away. I was like, I don't want to work in advertising. I want to help people understand Spain. That's a lot more fun. Advertising sucks.
Really? That's awesome. So, well, how long ago was this?
So I'm 43 now. So I moved to Spain 10 years ago, but I met my wife, my now wife, Yoli, like 15, 16 years ago. But we lived in New Zealand for a while together. It was kind of a bit of a back and forth for a while. But have lived here in Madrid for 11, I think it's 11 years now. Yeah.
Wow. So what made Spain so much better than New Zealand? Why did you want to get out of New Zealand, I guess?
I think some people, when they relocate or move to a new country, they feel like, it's not so strong to say I was born in the wrong country, but you visit another country and you're like, I think this is the country where I feel at home, you know.
Right.
And Spain, to be perfectly frank, if I had fallen in love and met a French woman, it probably would have been France. You know, I love Europe. I love Southern Europe particularly. And so it was just, I feel at home here. The culture, I'm a big history buff. I'm a big food buff. And you know, those things exist in New Zealand. You know, it's history. It's a little bit of a shorter history. There's great food, but it's not as sort of dynamic, the food scene, in the way I like the, you know, hopping between tapas bars. And I think also as like a lifelong learner, when you move to a new country, it's like suddenly you just could have this, all the stuff you have to learn again, like, you know, all about this country. So Spain just kind of provided that for me. It was like, you know, I could just dig in and spend years learning, eating, and, you know, and that hasn't stopped. So it's so much more still to eat and learn.
Right. Do you have a feeling that you needed to reinvent yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, that probably wasn't the reason for moving. You know, certainly once I'd tasted Spain, I felt like, New Zealand feels a little far away, a little quiet to me. But once you move to Spain, you know, I was working in advertising actually in Spain for the first 6 weeks or so. I was with a production company. So I was going to continue what I was doing in New Zealand. But I realized I had, like, you know, the term you use, reinvent yourself, moving to a new country was an opportunity to reinvent myself. I always say that it's like, you don't have all your friends from university and school around you who kind of, in a way, not intentionally, but by having that structure and that social network, in some ways it kind of makes it a little harder to make big life changes, because, you know, you're probably, the people you hang out with are your lawyer friends or your whatever friends. And so he's like, hey guys, I'm going to go and do something else. Even if they support you, it can feel a little bit challenging, you know, because you have a whole life set up around the structure you've built. So the minute you disassemble that structure, you're kind of free to do whatever. There's less things holding you back or standing in your way.
There's this interesting balance between, like, you love this lifestyle that, let's say, this place gives you, but you miss the friendship and family that your current base does. So it's like, which one do you value more? Which one is worth the trade-off or worth trying? It's really hard to explain to people.
Yeah, the family side is hard, particularly New Zealand, where it's so far away. But my parents have always lived throughout our lives. You know, we lived in Los Angeles for 3 years or 3 or 4 years when I was growing up. They lived in Asia before I was born. So I knew, you know, that they understand the desire. My brother lives in the UK with his family. His wife's English. So it's kind of like fits with the DNA of our family. So at least you have the understanding, if not the, you know, of course you have the missing from both sides, which is, you know, pretty intense.
Right.
I feel a little bit jealous of friends who are sort of, you know, English friends are like, oh, I just popped back for Christmas for a week or a weekend.
Right.
And, you know, it's a little harder for me in that sense.
My idea for that, for the solution to that problem, is to make a lot of money, hopefully one day, and just bring everyone over. Hey, you want a house in Spain?
Yeah, maybe my parents would come one day. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, who knows? There's a guy I follow on YouTube, a guy called Nathaniel Drew, who is American. Yeah, I haven't watched the video yet, but the video is his family is moving to Europe. His parents, I think they're in their 50s. So yeah, it's possible. I don't know if my sister is there. She's got a big family. I don't know if that's going to happen, but maybe extended time spent here that I can help support.
That's what I was inception, you know, a little bit, just slowly chisel away, and then one day,
totally.
Like, man, I'm so bored in whatever, New Zealand or where the hell I'm living. Let's come to Spain for a little bit.
Totally.
Yeah, I, you know, people are annoyed how much I've talked about Spain on this podcast, so I've decided to make an entire Spain-related episode to annoy them even more.
Very good. I think that's fair enough.
That feeling that you're talking about, you know, feeling like this is the place maybe that was right for you, I kind of feel the same way. When I traveled to Spain in 2019, I really fell in love with Valencia specifically.
Mm.
And my only thought process, and I've been to about 20, 30 different countries. So my thought process after that was, okay, this is amazing. Why is it impossible for me to get here? Because that's the mindset you have in North America. North America is very, you stay in your bubble, and a lot of people don't explore, unfortunately, the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So from that process, from that moment on, it's been, okay, I need a job. Okay, how do I get remote money? Oh, okay, I need a visa. How do I get, then it's like, it's you do these things one by one, and it seems impossible at first, but sure enough, you can do it.
Yeah. No, people do it all the time. I mean, you know, the visa thing, I mean, I married a Spaniard, obviously, and that's, you know,
you got the best ticket.
Yeah, that is really the best way to make the move. You know, I help people with relocation and visas and things like that, and the visa stuff is really hard. If you're not EU, or you're not married to an EU person or a Spanish person, then you got to show you've got a bunch of money, or you got to buy a property. It might get a little bit easier with a digital nomad visa that's coming down the line, but that's challenging for people, and it's doable, but you need to kind of tick the boxes, and generally you got to have the cash if you don't have the family connections.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on, you know, the future of remote work and freelancing, and Spain is kind of a bit of a struggling economy right now with a high unemployment rate. And my thought process is that once all these jobs become more accessible to everyone and you can kind of travel a bit more freely, because, you know, Portugal already has a really easy digital nomad visa. I'm sure Spain and all these other countries are going to, you know, soon to follow. Do you think we'll see a massive influx of new people and kind of a resurgence of the country?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, we just wrapped up my latest Move to Spain masterclass, and we were talking about this yesterday, actually, in the group coaching call that we have each week. And one of the people said, and I don't know, this was just something they'd read, that because it's been easier to get into Portugal, that there's starting to be some resentment by the Portuguese. Right. And again, I don't know if this is the case, and obviously it depends on the circumstances, the individual people. Some resentment toward, in the same way we've seen resentment towards tourists in different parts of Spain particularly, resentment towards remote workers who are driving up property prices and gentrifying. I don't think a country can – I don't know if it's healthy for a country to have a resurgence or support itself based on people who are working remote who maybe are only there temporarily. Certainly, that people want to come and experience the food and culture and spend some, you know, pay some tax money to the government coffers, then that's a part of the puzzle. But it doesn't feel like a strong structure to build a strong economy. I think I read yesterday that Spanish unemployment is, and I might be getting this wrong, is currently 12%, which is actually like low.
Oh, it's gone down. It was 15 last time I checked. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah, I think it would hit about 12 and something, which is low. You know, we have really big structural unemployment, which I don't think is going to be solved by kind of like, you know, an influx of that kind of money. It helps, and why not, you know? It helps, but it's not going to mean necessarily that there's all these jobs for, you know, sustainable jobs for other people necessarily, for Spanish people. I mean, there are going to be some, you know. You come, you want to renovate your home, you need a builder, piece of the puzzle, but not the answer, I would say.
I'm really curious to see what the future looks like with a lot of these countries that are opening up nomad visas, because I have also heard the same thing about Portugal. Like, some Portuguese people are upset that, you know, these people, because you're not paying a lot of tax on the nomad visa for Portugal. I think it's only like 10 to 15% income tax.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that. You have to be careful there. You know, as mentioned, it's pretty hard currently that there's no digital nomad visa per se for Spain yet. One is coming this year, probably. It's quite hard. It can be quite hard to get in. And I always thought, oh, that's a pain. But then when I heard that Portuguese thing, I started to think, well, maybe there's some value in that, because that's that resentment you don't really want. It's like you already got – and the tourist resentment thing is really focused on a few specific areas and a few specific types of tourist. I don't know if we want the, you know, expat go home or
– Yeah, you know. I gotcha. So talk to me about those first few, let's say, years of moving to Spain. What was that experience like? Totally new culture, totally new people, obviously a lot different than New Zealand. Your Spanish was probably horrendous.
Yeah, it was pretty
rusty. How was that?
I mean, I'm just trying to remember back. You know, I think when you move to a new country, you sort of think that it's like, you know, there's pre-move and there's post-move. It's like, hey, I live in – and I see this in my course. You know, it's people like, when I get to Spain, my life is going to be like this and things like that. And that is to some extent true. But what I've realized is, in the same way we go through seasons in our own lives, you know, you're young, you're a baby, you're an adolescent, then you're an adult. You kind of go through a sort of subset of seasons when you move country. So, you know, years 1 through 3 were this, years X were, you know, now I'm at year 11, I've got a baby now, got, you know, a new business that I'm running. So I think, you know, I think it's good that you talk about it, like, in what were the first few years, right? Because they were so different from what it is now. When I see photos and look back, it's like, oh my God, I look so young. I was kind of like a different. Now, I wasn't a different person. It just feels like there's so much that's happened. It feels like a long time ago. But they were great. They were exhilarating. I was thirsty to learn about the country. You know, it was just, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, moving to a new country, when you're moving for choice in a way that because you want to experience the culture or live in that culture, is very exhilarating. It makes you feel young. You kind of have a rebirth of sorts. So I was just like learning Spanish, learning about the culture, traveling, eating, started change careers.
You're making it sound awful. Who the hell would want this? This sounds awful.
Yeah. It was rough, you know. I'm kind of a melancholic person by nature. And so I'm always like, man, I wish I could do it again. And I would have taken one-on-one private Spanish tutoring from the get-go, and not just assume that I would pick it up. And I would have done this, and I would have started my YouTube channel earlier, and I would have made, you know, and yeah, but that's
not. There's a million of those things in life, and they're so, I don't know. It's like trying to pick out a scab. It's not really good for you.
No.
Did you do any Spanish before that? Did you study any Spanish before?
I studied French at school, and I say that because, you know, having learned another language that is has some similarities, you know, there is a subjunctive, you learn about different tenses. You know, I also learned Japanese, but that's sort of, you know, very different. So having learned French kind of introduced me to like the notion of learning another sort of Latin-based language. But I hadn't learned any Spanish when I met my, you know, my now wife. Like, I didn't speak any Spanish ever.
And she spoke English?
She spoke English. Yeah. She speaks English. And so her English, she wasn't super confident with her English at first. And so she also, when we met in France, we spoke French for the first sort of 8-9 months of our relationship in France. And neither of us native French speakers. So, you know, I'm sure my French was pretty rough too, but it was better than my Spanish. And then we kind of switched to English at some point. We moved back to New Zealand. We lived there together for about 4 years. And then we shifted to Spain. And now it's and then we spoke mix of Spanish and English, but a Spanglish. And now with our daughter, she speaks to her in Spanish. I speak to our daughter in English. And between us, we speak English so that she learns English, because obviously she lives in Spain. Our daughter, she's Spanish. She will learn Spanish. So again, seasons, right? Seasons in terms of the language.
What were some biggest like hurdles, adversities you had to deal with moving to Spain? What were some kind of maybe even culture shocks? I don't know. What were the challenges? People always talk about this romantic idea of moving to a country, but there's obviously downsides to everywhere you go. You can't avoid these problems.
Yeah. Well, I think the work thing took a while for me to kind of figure that out. You know, I feel fortunate for where I landed working in tourism and leading food tours around Madrid and growing a food tour company, Devour Tours. But it took me a while to kind of find that place. And so, you know, there were periods about a year in where, because I quit my job in advertising after about 6 weeks. Like, I'm going to be a travel writer. I'm going to write about Spain and travel and I'm going to help people explore this. And I thought I would just be like published in the New York Times like a week later and it'd be easy. You know, like 6 months later, I'd sold like one piece, you know, and earned like 300 euros. And so we didn't have a lot of money. And so that was rough a little bit. I mean, you know, not super rough, but it was stressful. And I started writing for like an English language magazine, just doing some writing. And then I started doing the tours and sort of started to kind of the pieces started to fall into place. But that's a hard thing. You know, if you're moving here to retire, that's one thing. So that was kind of hard. And I think the friend thing is hard and continues to be challenging in some ways because, you know, the friends that you go to school or university with or you have in your neighborhood, you have those very formative experiences with, and that creates really strong friendship bonds. And so to recreate those friendships as an adult, they can be obviously very meaningful, but they're different kinds of friendships. I mean, I have a friend coming for dinner tonight. He's a friend that I met in Spain. He's a journalist, an English guy. You know, he's lovely. But we met as adults when he already had kids. And so we haven't like gone and done that stupid weekend trip where we got drunk for like, you know, at 18. You know what I mean? We haven't got all those stories. So
yeah.
You can work hard, but I think I miss that a little bit. That is just kind of irreplaceable in a way. And so I miss, you know, I WhatsApp, you know, one of my good friends in New Zealand sometimes, like just a joke from our youth or some reference. I guess you can create that, but it's never quite the same. You know,
it's hard to make friends when you're older in general, but to do it in a country where you're the foreigner, it's kind of
And without falling into like the kind of the bubble where you just speak, all your friends are English speakers or
don't want that either.
Yeah. And that's easier to do than obviously creating all these independent Spanish friends. Cause when you're learning Spanish, you feel like a burden on that other person. You know, they're like, oh, they don't want to hang out with me. I'm like fumbling my words. And I'm
it's like talking to a fourth grader or something, right?
Yeah, totally. You know? So that's kind of, but friendships is always challenging.
Sure. I mean, even as you get older in life and your friends, even if you're, let's say, living in New Zealand, some of them move to other places, you could potentially lose those regardless. So
yeah. Yeah.
Really overthink it, it's, you know, you get down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, totally. You're right. Yeah.
So
what's
your average, I guess, you know, YouTube member, your clients, are these mostly older expats looking to retire there? How many people of my age are you seeing in these tours?
I don't know. How old are you?
29.
Oh my God. If only.
Please go easy on me.
If I could only do it all again. So My YouTube channel, I've been running it for about 6 or 7 years or so. Only in the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I've been doing it more seriously. And at the beginning, for most of it, it's been, my focus has been on helping tourists, right? And it tied in with my food tour company, Devour Tours, which we sold last year. I'm no longer an owner of that. During the pandemic, I realized that there was this other category of people watching the YouTube videos who, and the videos weren't about relocating Spain. They're about where to eat in Madrid or about this culture, right, or how to explore Barcelona. But of course, if you're moving to France, you would watch my version of the channel in France, right? Even if it's like where to eat in Barcelona, if you're looking at moving to Barcelona, you go there and you travel around and you want to know where to eat. So I realized there was this, although it's always been directed at tourists, there was a subcategory of people who were looking at audiences, members of the channel who were looking at moving to Spain. A lot of those people are, there's the full range, I guess to the extent that, that YouTube gives me analytics, it's like, the focus is sort of 25 to 65 or something like that. That's huge, but 25 to 55. Sure. It's a broad range. I don't know. When it comes to relocation, a lot of people who take my course about moving to Spain are nearing retirement. But there's a lot of people who are younger as well, who are in their 30s, their family, a lot of people from the States who feel like they just want to have an experience with their overseas, maybe to give their kids an experience for a year, or maybe they feel like Spain is a place where they belong more than Canada or the States. And so there's younger families as well, particularly.
I wonder if COVID played a big part in that, because a lot of people, I think, had a shift in mindset of, what am I doing in life? Is this what I want to be doing in life?
Yeah.
Where do I want to live? What do I want to do? I see that a lot with my friends. They pick this career path that maybe their parents told them about, or they pick something that they thought was going to make good money. And then 2, 4, 5, 8 years down the road, they're like, wait, I'm miserable. Is this really what I want to do? And I think people see Spain as this potentially escape route to a different lifestyle, whether that's true or not is going to be determined later. But
yeah, no, I think it's right. I think COVID has affected us all, obviously, in immediate ways for those people who lost people or got sick. But I think the COVID hangover has left us all reconsidering certain aspects of our lives, some to larger degree. Even the changes I've made in terms of selling Devour and now focusing on the YouTube channel and on, helping people move here with my course and things around that was and having a baby was all like a life shift that happened around that time. And so I think you're right that people think that what's the ultimate change you can make is literally moving physically around the country. So I'm sure there's some people who are like, hey, it's now or never. I have a lot of people, most of the people who, for example, take the course are from the US, and there's a lot of political tension in the US. And so they're looking to get away from that. So I think
Spain doesn't have.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you've, it's true, but I guess when you go to a new country, you feel like you can unplug from it, right?
Oh, true. Because you don't understand anything. You just have these little, you take off.
Yeah. Airplane. You kind of like, yeah. So they're like, well, this has worn me down. So I'm going to go and start again there. And at least I'll have like a reprieve for 5 years before I understand what's happening here,
Right.
I see a lot of that. And that's kind of, but a lot of these things are all very connected. I think that, in the same way you see a lot of rage on airplanes after COVID, probably a lot of tensions in countries are post COVID as well. People are like frustrated or can't, because the ability to change your life, you might want to change things in your life, but some people can't. What if you're in that job? And particularly I know in the States, where healthcare costs are higher and things like that, like it might make it I got a mortgage, I got to pay healthcare. How can I make a change?
Once you're really deep in that hole, it's hard to get out sometimes.
Yeah. And so I can understand, if not condone, why people might go nuts on on airplanes.
What's the life been like after COVID in Spain? Because I went there last summer, and to me it seemed relatively normal. But I've heard, I was talking to one of the cab drivers. He was saying there's a little more hostility. What's the word? Hostility. Hostility between, let's say, some of the younger people who have had to put up with what they think maybe like are unjustified restrictions, and then some of the older people that are super cautious and stuff like that. Do you feel like there's a bit of that in Spain?
I haven't really seen that. I think that, I think some younger people started to get frustrated that they were kind of like the being blamed for being the irresponsible ones. You know, back when everybody was supposed to wear a mask and things like that, you know, you look out in the street and it's like, you know, who the people who weren't wearing a mask or were flouting, you know, what the regulations there, you know, there were young people, there were older people, it's kind of everybody. So I think young people might have gotten frustrated with that. And also maybe just like one thing is COVID happening when you're like 41 to 43 and it's like, okay, well, you know, is that different from 38 to 41 or 45 sure. to 47? But when it's like your prom and you're 17 to 19, which are really informative social years, I think it's easy to underestimate how impactful that is for someone of that age to miss out on what for all of us. We have a lot of great memories, particularly, you know, from school or university during that period. So, you know, I think that's sad for those younger people. So maybe there's some frustration, but I didn't hang out with a lot of sort of, you know, 25, 22 year olds and 17 year olds. So I don't know how they're feeling.
All right. Well, when I get to Valencia, you've got a place to make some videos.
Yeah. Definitely.
So what are some big mistakes people – I have a lot of friends who are going to Spain for the summer. What are some big mistakes people make when they're coming to Spain, whether they're trying to live their American lifestyle in Spain or they're not
– As tourists or to relocate?
As tourists.
Yeah. It's funny. The video next we're going to put out on the YouTube channel is like the 15 most common questions and mistakes and assumptions that I get. And a lot of them are smaller ones. You know, they're kind of like the little things that people don't understand. I think that people have an image of Spain of – it's almost like they have an image of Spain of X number of years ago. And Spain is a fully developed, advanced, modern economy. And, you know, people think they're going to be paying for cash everywhere and it's going to be very old-fashioned. It's like, you know, I tap and go really? Everywhere and, you know – maybe, you know, I don't know what it's like in the States. Maybe it's not as advanced in the States and you have new ways to pay that I have never heard of, but we tap and go, you know, and I think people, so from the food perspective, I think people misunderstand tapas. They think it's, I don't know what they think, but they think maybe it's just like a description of a plate of food or something like that. Whereas really, you know, we have a verb in Spanish, which is to tapear, which is to go for tapas. It's like tapas is like an activity and you have to think about it as an activity. And so, you know, one of my early videos was like helping people understand tapas and the activity side of it, which is like social kind of going to bar with friends and sharing food and in a very informal way. Maybe you go to another bar afterwards. And so I think people misunderstand that. I think that can be a valuable thing to understand before people come here. I think the other thing is, and I say this in the video, it's like, don't become paella obsessed. It's like, you know, look, if you're going to Valencia, it's an important part of your trip. But I understand, like, if I'm going to like Chicago, I want to get like deep dish pizza or something like that. But like,
no, you don't. Trust me.
No, I don't. Well, here's the thing. Like,
you want to experience it. Of course I'm trolling, but yeah.
But like the way
that's
you
what it's known
say
for.
That, yeah, that's what it's known for. So Spain is like known for paella, but it's like, you know, probably 90% of people who eat paella in Spain eat a bad one because they don't go to a good restaurant for
it. That's tragic. That's a tragic stat you just dropped on us.
Totally. And I made that up, but I think it's probably appropriate. There's a lot of frozen paella out there. And they put a lot of pressure on it, even when it is a good one. Like, I've got to have this great paella. And it's like literally for me, paella is what I call an experience dish. It's like the cocido madrileño in Madrid. And so it's about the dish, but it's about the environment in which you have the dish. It's about the friends around you that kind of make the dish make sense. Like having a barbecue, you know, imagine if you're in the States and you're like friends, like, come over, we're going to be grilling, you know, July 4th. And like, you know, you're outside, you're drinking beers, you're chatting over the barbecue. Now you can have the exact same food sitting in like a semi-formal restaurant. It's totally different, although the food is exactly the same. And so I think people come and they think paella is all about that that food experience. And yes, it is, but it's so much more than that. And it's hard as a tourist to have the full experience. It's easier in Valencia because you can have them in more kind of rural environments. Whereas in Madrid, the best rice restaurants are like kind of formal like restaurants. And so it kind of kills the vibe a little bit of having a paella. So I think people get very paella obsessed and think it's going to be, they've got to have the right paella. It's like you could come and have an incredible gastronomic experience in Spain and paella and not even have a paella. And trust me, when you come to Spain for 2 weeks and you're obsessed with paella, once you leave, the dish that you remember most will not have been the paella, probably.
Right. So is there also a problem with people trying to quantify, like, oh, how much am I getting for this? Or how much is this? Where, like, they're very consumer-based thinking as opposed to experience-based thinking.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, I think that, like, all of us, when we travel, you know, we have a definition in our mind of what success would look like for that trip. I mean, you know, I do this, everybody does this, or, you know, I'm sure not everybody, but the more enlightened people don't. But it's like, you know, so often when you go, you close TripAdvisor, you just walk down, you're like, hey, what about that place? You know, and maybe it's going to be crappy, who knows, but you'll have an experience simply by launching yourself in and trying it. Yeah, into the unknown. And so it's a, you know, I was talking to my parents about how when we used to travel as a family when I was younger, and it's like we did a driving trip around Italy. And I mean, we were just driving to a city and then look for a hotel. But we had like the Let's Go guide, which you're probably too young to.
I don't know.
It was like pre Lonely Planet. And so, and they would just like have that. And you would find a place and you would say, have you got a room? And maybe you would call ahead from the next town. But, you know, and this. There's something that with the ease of how much knowledge there is out there, including my videos, it's kind of like people, I've met people numerous times in the street who are like, hey, I love your videos. Here's my, you know, Google sheet where I've like mapped out all the places I got to try based on my videos. And it's like,
lose the romantic side of it, right?
Yeah. But I can understand because I'm like, you got to eat here. You got to try this. Oh, don't do this. You know? So,
in one sense, it's what you do and it's what you are making your life around. In another sense, it's kind of losing the romantic side of which what you had originally when you came to Spain, of exploring these places and how that's how you know about so many different places because you just went to a billion random places, right? So we're catch-22.
Yeah, but I go on trips. And actually, one of the YouTube videos that I want to make is to go on a trip and I don't plan anything. Because I always like – I know I've done it so that the place I go to in wherever is good. Like it's probably going to be good because I know how to read between the lines on Google reviews and TripAdvisor. I can ask colleagues, friends. And so, yeah, because I want to give a good recommendation. Like it's like, what is the purpose of a crappy recommendation? But there is space for like one video where it's like, guys, I don't know if there's going to be any good recommendations out of this video, but I just want you to, I'm just going to go on this trip and we're going to film it and we're going to see how it goes.
I can, the YouTuber side of me already sees the, like the title and the thumbnail. Yeah. I'm airdropped in a small city next to Madrid. I have $100. Let's see what I can get or something along those lines.
It's yeah.
Sure totally. In the thumbnail. It's $100.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, eating like pig's ear or something.
Right. I'm glad you're bringing up the tapas though, because that's a very interesting part of your videos. A lot of your videos are based around that. I have so many questions from that element. How are you putting down seven different tapa bars in one trip? I don't understand this. What's the Hollywood magic there that you're pulling off?
It's funny. I've met people say that and like, oh my God, you eat so much. I mean, I do eat a lot when I'm, you know, I guess I have a big appetite, not that huge. I mean, when I'm filming, I guess I'm on such an adrenaline rush that I enjoy it so much, the eating, that I don't really think
you're like Mike Tyson. You don't think about the pain of the punch. You're just like in there now.
I recently did have an experience, though. I don't know if you – do you know the food YouTuber Mark Wiens?
Mark Wiens.
W-E-I-N-S.
No, I haven't seen this guy, but yeah.
So he's like this huge
– I've seen him on your channel, right? Or I've seen you post some videos or
– I posted it on Instagram. I was in his – it hasn't come out yet. It's coming out. I think this week, a video of his showing him around in Madrid. And that was like, it was a couple of weeks back. And by the end of it, maybe because I was like more toned down because I was not the main driver of the video. Like I was in his video, but I was like, I think I'm going to be sick afterwards. Like we ate a lot, you
really?
Know, it was like, yeah, I was like, and I've never really felt that before. So I'll often finish filming and I'm like a little gutsy and all like, and feeling a little gross. But I'm never like stuffed. And by the end, you know, I'll always say to people, look, we may not finish everything, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not good at controlling myself. You know, sometimes I'm like, I chastise myself because I'm like, I should have just had one bite for the camera and that was it. And,
right.
And, you know, then I'd feel great. I should have only just had that one sip of wine for the camera, but I'll like finish the glass. And it was actually quite liberating being with Mark, who's like, you know, biggest food YouTuber in the world. And he's like obsessed with food, and like off camera, he's like stuffing himself. He's like, oh my God, it's okay to be like this, you know, and not be like super controlled. And I remember I did a collab with one guy once, and like he almost like pretend eating because he didn't want to feel sick, which I can kind of understand, but it was like, oh, I'm such an amateur. I go nuts off camera and just keep going, you know? So I felt a little bit kind of vindicated.
Fair. Well, I'm always curious, how did you feel about like filming? Like I get uncomfortable if I have to film in front of my like friends, but yeah. How do you walk around cities and film? And I know in your first videos, you know, obviously progressing got better over time, but was this a weird concept? But now obviously in the digital age and everyone's a TikTok or a YouTuber, got the camera in the face, but you were doing it like 8 years ago when it wasn't even cool.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't know. I didn't even think about that. I would love to have gone back when I uploaded my first video and see what was actually on YouTube at the time. But it was, how do I feel? I feel the thing that, you know, I do think about it sometimes, like, and actually, you know, now I don't care. Like, I'm just like,
you're a veteran in this game.
Yeah. And it's just like, for the camera, this is what it's all about. You think that you look weird to the other people, but if the other people see you and what you're saying is sensible and you've obviously got a decent setup and a rig and you kind of know what you're doing, then you'll be like, oh, it's someone who's working and is doing their thing. Right. Good for them. And so I try and put myself a little bit in their shoes, and I realize I don't look as ridiculous as I think. The thing that I actually struggle with a little bit is if people recognize me from the videos and then see me filming, I find that almost more embarrassing than if they don't know who the hell I am. And so in that sense, if I'm filming in a bar in the center of Madrid, I feel a little awkward because like, oh, they can see me doing my thing. It's almost like the curtain's pulled back.
Are you destroying the Tapa experience with your massive $2,000 camera in the...
Yeah, it feels a little kind of like, I don't know. So that feels a little like we were just filming the other day in the center. And I didn't hear it, but Yali, my wife, said, we just walked past some people and some, and she said, oh, they whispered to each other, look, there's the tapas couple, or there's the tapas people.
There's the tapa guy.
Yeah. So, but it's, you know, it does happen, but I don't know. It's more also when you're filming inside a place and you're sitting there on the camera and you're on your own. It's easier when you're with someone, but if you're filming on your own, feel a little bit silly, but like, I don't know. You just got to get over it.
You've gotten over it. You're a veteran in this game. What a stupid question.
No, not a stupid question, because I still think about it, but I just literally think, get over it. In the end, when you sit down and look at the stuff at the end of the day, you want to feel good about that, and who cares what people think?
Yeah, fair. You've done this now for 8 years, and do you feel like there's still a billion different videos to make? Do you feel like you're even close to running out of ideas?
No, I feel like I'm just getting started.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I think because it's also changed the kind of video, well, it may, you know, it may feel like I'm making the same video that I've been making 8 years ago, but I think in my head and the kind of the videos and how I see them, I mean, just like that one of going on the trip without having the social media or without using Google and stuff like that, like what I'm trying to do more and more, and I'm just only kind of starting getting into this, is less like, you know, top five tapas in Granada, like, you know, there's plenty of that, but more a kind of a story element, or more collaborating with someone who does something interesting. I'm talking to a guy who gives great tours of Civil War tours of Barcelona, and do a collaboration with him in October. So trying to get more into like a story side of the videos, and also collaborating with interesting people and highlighting them. So, you know, and to the extent that it's, you know, the five top places to eat, how can I make that a little more than just a list? You know, and so
almost like a Bourdain style of storytelling about a location, right? With
a little
maybe
bit,
maybe not to that extent, but
yeah, not quite to that extent as much. Although I would love to. I think one of the limiting factors for me currently is that, you know, I don't edit the videos. I have an editor I work with, but you know, the videos are just one piece of what I do, and so I can't sort of spend full time just on the videos. And, you know, part of me would love to, but that's not realistic for, you know, how things are at right now. So You know, would love to kind of like also, it's important for me to more and more show places that are not the typical spots. Although I feel a little bit, you know, like those people that work, you know, those actors, like I do one for the studios and one for me.
Oh, so,
you know, I'll do like, you know, I mean, literally a video coming up, which I feel a little uncomfortable about in some ways, but I think it's legitimate to do, is like, I've made 3 videos eating in San Sebastian, but none of them in the Old Town, which is the most touristic part, but it's also where there's amazing food. And so making a video coming up in August there, going on a pincho crawl. But then also the one I just did in Madrid is in a super neighborhood in Madrid that, no, you know, if you're a tourist, you've never heard of. So more and more also trying to highlight the lesser known parts of Spain, which I think people are curious about. And I just want to, you know, I want to feature. And another one coming up, I don't know if you saw, I did a collaboration where I went and to eat organ meat with a friend of mine, Phil, who has a football podcast.
Yes, I love Phil. Phil's reactions to those foods that he's eating makes those videos so great.
Phil is great fun. And so, and he's kind of a bit of, you know, he's like, he's different from me. I'm like, oh, let's go and do this. And he's like,
he's very reserved. Yeah. And he's a little,
he's more reserved. Yeah. And so
it's a perfect matchup, actually.
Yeah. And so I think we're going to do one where we go to like, Aro in Rioja, which is like the capital of Spanish wine in a way. And I'm going to teach Phil about wine and take him drinking all these kind of wine bars and wineries and stuff like that. So we're going to do a little like road trip video. So, you know, again, also the format, you know, now that we've got a baby, Yoli and I, it makes it harder for us to just like go out and eat tapas together. So, but that's also been a positive, to an opportunity to bring more people into the channel, you know,
right, get some help. Is there this weird trade-off between making videos that you know are going to be highly searched and are very, I don't want to say generic, but they know exactly what they are. Top 5 blank in Barcelona is obviously going to do better than top 5 in random ghost town and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think if you frame it that way, it will. But I think, some things are just not as interesting to an audience. But, you know, the random ghost town, you know, what I like to think about it, and it can be really hard to do this, is there is going to be an angle in which people are going to be really interested in that. It may not be top five places to eat in insert name that nobody's ever heard of, because nobody's going to click on that.
Yes, it needs a catch. It needs needs something.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, you know, tourists have never been and stepped inside these restaurants or like whatever.
One place you've never heard of or something. Yeah. Some X amazing, whatever.
Yeah. And so that, there's always a way to make it interesting. But some videos just do better than others because, you know, people are super interested in Malaga, and I had no content on Malaga. So when I made a video about Malaga, it was very successful. Whereas, you know, the one I just released, Eating in a Neighborhood in Madrid, well, I've got already Madrid content, right? So,
Valencia content? What's going on with that?
Yeah, it's sort of been on the list because then
I sound mad. I'm like, where the hell is the Valencia content?
No, fair enough. I'm hoping to get there in September. So,
I might be there by then.
Yeah, cool.
If you're there.
I'm hoping to get there. I haven't sort of finalized the dates yet, but I want to do a video on paella and a video just about like the city. I don't quite have it clear yet, you know, the food and the culture and the history of the city.
Valencia in September actually has a few interesting events. Like, I don't know if these are the kind of videos you're interested in, but there's a Davis Cup.
Oh, really?
In Valencia.
Is that golf?
No, it's tennis.
Okay. Obviously, I'm not interested in that.
Now, I know that sounds boring. However, it's going to be Spain versus Serbia, probably in the first opening match in Valencia, which might be Nadal versus Djokovic, which would be.
Okay. Is that a big deal?
That's like, I'm trying to. You watch soccer?
Yeah, no.
You watch football? Like, yeah. You watch football? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Barcelona, Madrid. We're talking like that level of. That's the biggest match in tennis.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. I'll try not to be there those days then, because it'll be a nightmare trying to get a hotel. So thanks for the heads up. So also in Valencia, though, from 17 to the 20th of September is like build up to World Paella Day.
Oh, so, is it? Perfect.
Yeah. So I think the 20th is World Paella Day.
Oh,
so
I got to be there for that.
10 finalist chefs, and then they declare the winner. I emailed the Valencia Tourism Board to see if I could do a video where I taste each of the 10 paellas, and they were like, yeah, no. And so so I thought that would have been good, but not going to happen.
it, You have several kinds of videos. You have food videos, and then you know, I remember in the past you had let's say Bernabeu tour, and you kind of veered off of those. You're not doing those as much. Why is that?
When you say the Bernabeu, you mean like non-food ones or?
Yeah, like that are, you do have a lot of food ones, which is probably like your main content. Then you also have, exploring smaller cities. And then within those smaller cities, you have the food content. But you don't have as many videos as like these, I don't want to say tourist traps, but these more known tourist activities like going to the Bernabeu and other activities that are only available in Spain.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think football is just like is a bit of a black hole because it's not something I'm really into, but. I think about the channel, I think about the format, the different kind of formats that we have, I think about it in terms of like, there's a food tour type of video. There's a city exploration video. There's like a travel vlog style. There's an opinion video. I did opinion on a video called The Problem with Spanish Wine, which is me giving my opinion on something. So I do categorize videos like that. but I think that, what was I going to say?
You're talking about categories of videos and what kind of content you're making and why you're making that kind of content as opposed to potentially like touristy videos.
I get emails from people. It's like, or comments on the YouTube channel, like, hey, can you make a video about public transport in Barcelona? And it's like, I don't make like travel tips videos. I always try and make it. I guess the eating stuff, they are travel tips because like go to the village and here we're going to explore. But I try and make
experience
it
videos.
Sort of some sort of story. So I don't be like, so I'm not like, here's how Madrid, the metro system works. Or like someone was like, can you make a video about keeping safe, in the evening in Barcelona or something? It's just like, I just sort of don't do that, I try and find there could be a video of like, scams to avoid in Spain or something like that. That'd probably do pretty well. But I always find those.
Not get pickpocketed in Barcelona would be a one I would watch.
Yeah, no, and like, yeah, I mean, totally. But I try not to do like just literally how to stuff. That's not kind of what my focus is.
Where do you see, I guess, then the future of the channel? What's your big goal, aspiration? Is it some sort of Netflix type special where you have a camera crew and you have a bigger budget? What's your end goal, I guess, if you have one?
So I think one of the things with YouTube is it serves sort of two things for me. On the one hand, it's just an art form that I enjoy, and obviously I have income from the ads, and so it's a business in that sense, and something I love doing. But it also serves. But the trap with YouTube, Instagram is you don't quote unquote own the subscribers. You don't have their details. So at any point, maybe people stop using YouTube because they're all watching TikTok or something like that. And so I try not to get too connected to the medium if I don't have control of the medium. So I guess I use YouTube also for marketing. I have an email list so that people find me, get on that email list by downloading one of my freebies that they find out about through the YouTube videos. Also have a Move to Spain masterclass that I offer, an online course to help people to move to Spain successfully. And so I see my business more in terms of those things. And as long as YouTube is working and it's fun,
it's a gateway to this other thing.
But it's more than that as well, because I love it. I've always, I have a filmmaking background. It's a huge part of my identity, but I'm not super attached to, it could be another medium suddenly, or it could be, if Netflix got in touch, would be
Netflix,
amazing.
I'll pass,
and I would definitely do that. But it kind of like doesn't fit within my current kind of like plan of the business model. The business model is like, well, how can I build something that's enjoyable, but also like a sustainable business for me and my family. And generally the minute you rely on, say, YouTube ad income, which goes up and down, or the pandemic hits and things like that, then that can be very, very unreliable. So I try not to get too attached to YouTube in terms of like my future on YouTube. What I do want to do is keep making better videos. And also think about like, I'm 43. When I'm 53, am I going to be on YouTube? Do people want to see a 53-year-old guy like guzzling wine and like a, so I think about like how will the videos evolve as my life here evolves,
right?
And my interests evolve, and my ability to tell better stories evolves. So I think about it in that sense.
Let me ask you some rapid fire questions. We're approaching almost the hour mark. Yeah. Top five locations tourists should go to in Spain that you can't find on TripAdvisor.
Oof, man.
That's a tough one. I know.
So that you can't
find. It doesn't have to be a city. It can be an actual, like it could be like an actual location, a castle or whatever. So it gives you a little bit more to work with.
I think the problem is you can find everything on TripAdvisor, but
it's, let's say on the second page of TripAdvisor, because the first page is going to be very obvious.
Well, I think you know, a great place to eat in Malaga is called Mesón Mariano, which I love. It's amazing. Mesón Mariano.
Right up.
Yeah, it's probably on page one these days, but it wasn't. And what else? Five. I think.
Maybe give me three. I don't know. You give me three.
There was a place that we ate in Asturias, just like this random, I don't even know what it was called, but like this. Well, actually, here's a place in Ribeira Sacra, which is a wine region in Galicia. There's a winery called Algeira, A-L-G, Algeira, I'm going to spell it wrong. A-L-G-U-E-I-R-A. And that's just a beautiful winery with amazing wine. They have a great restaurant. It's just a fantastic spot. And then I would say the other place, I've got to have a place down south, somewhere in Cádiz. I mean, this place is.
I think people are surprised that Spain has so many different wine regions. I don't know if people know in general that Spain is such a wine powerhouse, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Spanish wine is incredible and, you know, quite undervalued. So I think another place is Bodegas Manzanilla in Cádiz, which is just this little kind of sherry bar, which is just like walking into a museum. It's incredible. It's in my latest Cádiz videos. And I just love that place. It's just beautiful. You can feel the history. It's not full of tourists. I mean, Cádiz itself is like the great undervisited. It's getting more popular now, I think, but it's my favorite city in Spain.
What are you most excited about going forward? Places to travel in Spain, videos to make?
I'm excited about hopefully getting my act together so I can do this Valencia trip in September.
Yes.
And I want to do a Barcelona trip in October. I'm going to New Zealand in mid-December for Christmas. We're going over there to have Christmas with family. And I really want to have the Valencia and Barcelona videos shot and up on the channel by then. And it's just, you know, I've got a few things going on, you know, business-wise. So I'm hoping I can get those things sorted. And I think I can, but I just need to really kind of buckle down and get that happening. And just, you know, and kind of the way I've been thinking about how future videos will be, you know, hopefully, you know, improving the videos, like, you know, and making them less kind of like go and eat here and more, I don't know, maybe some more of my opinion, my thoughts, you know.
A bit more of a story arc to it, or.
Yeah, a bit more of a story arc, exactly.
Beautiful. I'm a big fan of your content. I love your videos. For anyone that's interested, I'll leave a link down below to the YouTube,
cool,
to your masterclass, to anything else that you're doing. Please check it out. You know, you're one click away. Don't be lazy, people.
Appreciate
Thank you so
that.
Much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Last one. Thanks, Nelly. Good talking.